This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Spoiler alert! What Did You Watch This Week is a candid discussion about recent movies and TV shows, and it may contain spoilers if you haven't watched them yet. Listen at your own risk.
Welcome to episode number 143 of What Did You Watch This Week? This is Mike.
And I'm John.
Got an itch, John? Scratching your head like you
I think it was itches. More just like a something to do with my hand.
Yeah.
I don't want to scratch my nuts.
No, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Didn't watch a lot this week.
Me either. There wasn't a lot to watch. The stuff that I did watch, though, I felt was quality.
Yeah.
But there wasn't that much to watch, but I didn't feel bad about it. It wasn't like I came to the recording tonight and went, oh, God, I've got nothing to talk about. There was some good stuff.
I got some stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
Like, I'd like to talk about the Golden Globe Awards that happened last night.
Okay.
I mean, there was a lot that happened. We're a show about watching TV.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? This is awards for TVs. Well, TVs and movies. And this is an awards show for TVs and movies.
There were an awful lot of upsets.
And I feel like we could briefly speak about some of them.
Yes.
Or every category, but briefly.
What do you got?
Anyway, I got all the results here in front of me.
I knew you would.
Yeah, because you know, I figured if I want to talk about it, I should have it here in front of me as opposed to going, hey, let's talk about the Golden Globe Awards. Get them up.
Yeah.
Those results there, John.
Why don't we take some time here and dig through and figure out what happened.
Right.
And why we care.
So on the film side of things, it's always hilarious to me that they break it down into categories of drama and then musical or comedy.
Mm.
Why aren't action movies in here? Yeah. Why aren't horror movies in here?
Yeah.
Maybe they put horror under drama? I don't know.
There's no such thing as horror movies anymore.
No?
I don't know. But Get Out, maybe.
They got Black Panther as a drama.
Yeah, that just seems wrong.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, they need to expand their categories at least a little bit.
I mean, this is the 76th annual, so I mean, 76 years they've had to work on these bad boys. Hosted by Sandra Oh and Andy Samberg. That's a weird combo.
It is, but I think that they kind of needed that. A lot of these award shows lately have been having a huge problem with their hosts.
Yeah.
You know, the Oscars this year was supposed to be Kevin Johnson. Kevin Hart.
Kevin Johnson. Yeah. Who's that? Sorry.
Kevin Hart. And then as seems to be the case with a lot of people, some people dug up some old tweets of his that were homophobic, and suddenly he was like, nope, not going to host the Oscars now because, you know, controversy. So I looked at the Andy Samberg and Sandra Oh is like, well, they found two people who don't have any current controversy and just said, grab them.
Fair enough. So under the film category for Best Motion Picture and a Musical Comedy, Green Book.
Never watched it.
I haven't seen it either. It's the one with Viggo Mortensen, and
was it a musical or a comedy?
I think a musical.
Okay.
I think it fell under the music category. It's about Viggo Mortensen is a bodyguard of a gentleman who in the South. It says he.
Oh yeah. And he's
set in the
like
deep South in 1960.
And
it follows a tour between African Americans, classical and jazz pianist Don Shirley and Tony. An Italian bouncer who served as Shirley's driver and bodyguard.
Nice.
So it's like an updated Driving Miss Daisy.
That was a good pronunciation.
Thanks.
I like that.
Drama was Bohemian Rhapsody, which I figured would be a comedy. I mean, a via musical. Which I thought would be on, which would fall into the musical category.
Why is that not a musical?
Yeah.
Why is that not a musical?
Well, but here's the other thing. It beat out A Star is Born, which is also in the drama category, which, again, I figured that would be under the musical.
So that one that you were talking about, that one for comedy and musical, there was a lot of comedic elements in the previews for it, but it was more like a buddy kind of.
It was also more like a Dumb and Dumber. A Southern racist comedy. Wink, wink.
Yes.
Boy, come in the back door to play here, you know.
But, yeah. So musical must be straight up like Cats, Hair.
Okay, Hamilton. So under musical and comedy, for the nominees, they had Vice, Mary Poppins Returns, Crazy Rich Asians, Green Book, and then The Favorite, which The Favorite is a historical period comedy drama filmed, directed by Yorgos Lanthimos. I'm not even going to try. It's, yeah.
Good yeah, Lord, look at all those vowels.
Focus on the behind-the-scenes politics between two cousins. I mean, like, I guess it's a comedy. So, I mean, was there any real musicals in there? Because Mary Poppins, I mean, are they calling that a musical?
Yeah, that would have to be a musical. Okay,
but then it's in no more musical than A Star Is Born or Bohemian Rhapsody.
Which were dramas.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that they're kind of stupid in their categories.
Best performance in a motion picture drama. Actress was Glenn Close in The Wife.
Yeah, and she kind of lost her shit when they called her name. She was like, oh my God, oh my God.
Yeah. I had never even heard of this movie.
No, I didn't either. I had.
And then Rami Malek in Bohemian Rhapsody.
Mm.
So that's cool. I actually saw his acceptance speech. I literally watched 10 minutes of the awards, which included his acceptance speech. And I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's awesome.
He is. Best performance in musical comedy, actress Olivia Colman for The Favorite as Queen Anne, and Christian Bale as Vic and Dick Cheney. Sorry. Vice, as it's Dick Cheney, sorry. Best supporting performances in motion picture, supporting actor, the guy that plays Don Shirley in Green Book.
I can't actually see the screen.
Don Mahershala Ali. Mahershala.
Fuck, look at all those consonants.
Basically, yeah. And then Regina.
I'll throw an E in there.
And then Regina King in If Beale Street Could Talk, which I'd never heard of that one.
Yeah, I don't care about that one.
And then under the other category, best directors, Alfonso Cuarón and Roma,
uh-huh.
Best screenplay.
That was apparently a big upset because yeah. It was a direct-to-Netflix movie.
Yeah, and which Netflix advertised the shit out of. Yeah. And I've read it and went, I don't want to watch this.
Yeah, and people are really pissed that he won it for some reason.
I didn't realize Bradley Cooper directed A Star Is Born, apparently.
Yes, he did.
Anyways, best screenplay was the fellas that wrote The Green Book, including one of the Farrelly brothers. Best original score, Justin Hurwitz for First Man, which I think that's the one with
Sean
Ryan Gosling.
Oh.
Based on Neil Armstrong's life.
Mm.
Yeah. He plays Neil Armstrong, First Man on the Moon. And then the best original song, Shallow, for A Star Is Born, sung by Lady Gaga.
Mm.
That doesn't surprise me. She's a good singer.
And Bradley Cooper. It's on the radio all the time.
I've never heard it. Never heard it. But his name's not in there.
Tell me, girl.
No, best foreign language film, Roma.
Yeah.
And then best animated feature film, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Hot damn, yeah. I heard that there's possibility that could actually go home with a best picture at
Oscar. Really?
Hmm. Dude, it was great.
Yeah,
it was so good. I hung out with the Petries this weekend, and we were talking about movies that they've seen that I've seen. They both loved Vice. They thought it was great.
Huh.
But when I mentioned Spider-Man, they're like, oh, my God, it was so good. And like, both of them just lost it. Speaking of Vice, did you hear about Christian Bale's acceptance speech?
No.
So he played Dick Cheney in the movie,
yeah.
And he got up there, and he said, I would like to thank Satan for the inspiration to play this character.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, the Satanic Church came out and said, we endorse this.
Did that get a laugh?
Uh-huh.
I know people did the awkward quiet thing.
It got a laugh, but then online it sparked a bit of a debate.
I'm sure it did. Best television series, musical or comedy? The Comiskey Method, which Alex raved about on Netflix.
And I watched the whole thing and I thought it was okay.
That must be The Marvelous Miss Maisel, kidding. The Good Place and Barry were the other categories.
The Good Place lost?
Yeah.
To the Comiskey Method?
Yeah.
I would have even put Kidding over the Comiskey Method.
Yeah.
Kidding, I went on about that every episode.
I know you did.
And you and I have both watched The Good Place and how phenomenal
it is. Phenomenal.
By the way, another fun fact over here.
Yeah.
So, Jamila Jamil.
Sure.
That is Tahani on The Good Place.
Yes.
Okay. So her name in real life is Jamila Jamil. Okay. When she showed up at the Golden Globes, they were doing all their red carpet stuff like that. The teleprompter up on the screen had her name as Camila Al-Jamil, which not only is not her name, but it's the name of her sister on The Good Place. So they specifically gave her the name of Tahani's sister, Camilla.
That is hilarious.
That is friggin' hilarious. And she thought it was great. She's like, I don't know who did this, but it's awesome.
Because that's on NBC.
Yeah.
The Good Place. I mean, the Golden Globes is on NBC.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Isn't that awesome?
That is hilarious. See, I love things like that.
Yep.
That is the best. Best television series drama, The Americans, which I've never watched a single episode of.
I've got to, because I've heard nothing but good about it. My sister loves it.
People just ranted and raved to me how great Luther was.
I've heard that.
And I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, it's on its fifth season now. I'm like, fuck that.
Isn't it a BBC show, though?
It is. So it might
so, like,
be only
a season's one episode.
Well, it's probably 10, I bet.
I'm going to look it up while you're talking about that.
Best performance in a television series drama, actor Richard Madden in Bodyguard as Sergeant David Budd. As a person who watched Bodyguard, I can get behind that.
Okay.
That was good. I enjoyed that. He beat out Jason Bateman for Ozark, Stephen James for Homecoming, Stephon James, Billy Porter for Posse or Pose, and Matthew Rhys for The Americans.
Well, there's a difference.
Well,
is it P-O-S-E or P-O-S-S-E?
It's P-O-S-E.
So Pose.
Yeah, Pose.
Luther.
Yeah.
It's a British TV series.
Sure, sure.
It's been running since 2010.
Yeah.
So it's been around for 8 years.
But it's in its fifth season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Episode guide. 21 episodes.
Oh, that's it?
God. So there's four episodes per season, my friend.
How long is each episode?
Let's see.
90 minutes?
I don't even know if they have that on IMDb.
I thought you were going for
Wikipedia?
Yeah, because Wikipedia will list that. Luther, Lex. Oh, I typed in Luther, it brought up Lex Luther. I'm not upset about that. You know,
I'm okay with that.
I'm not upset about that. Let's see.
Looks like the first season had six episodes. Let's see. Including the seventh episode that was an inside look.
Here you go. Luther TV series.
Season two had four.
57 episodes. To 62 minutes per episode.
Okay. So we had six episodes, then four episodes.
Yeah.
Then four episodes.
So actually, maybe I will watch it then. Six, four. Oh, season four had two episodes. And season five, four episodes. And they apparently, they ran them four nights in a row.
So, yeah, I think it's 21 episodes. It's attainable. That is
January.
That is a single season of Supernatural back in the day.
Yeah. Isn't that weird how they do, BBC does their TV shows like that?
You mean well?
But what I mean is like, all right, so every other episode, every other season, they've aired one episode a week type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they took the 2 years off between two and three. They took 2 years off between three and four, which was only a year and a half off. No, 2.5 years between three and four, and it was only two episodes. And then legitimately 4 years, 3 years and a little bit before the last season.
Idris Elba was a busy man.
And they aired them all, you know.
Apparently he took a really nice picture, a selfie with Daniel Craig at the Golden Globes.
Oh, yes, I saw that. Daniel Craig's giving him, like, the stink eye or whatever.
Yeah.
I thought that was hilarious. I thought that was absolutely hilarious.
Yep.
I mean, what do you think about the decision of?
I can definitely see Idris Elba. He is a powerful, commanding, sexy as hell man. He could definitely pull off a James Bond. And it would be a unique kind of James Bond.
It would be.
It would not be a Timothy Dalton James Bond. It would probably be closer to a Sean Connery kind of James Bond.
He is apparently filming Fast and the Furious, Hobbs and Shaw.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the spinoff. The Rock's doing that as well.
Apparently they're filming Cats. He's playing McCavity.
Is he the cat whose teeth fall out?
Well played. All right, back to the TV shows. Okay, best performance in a television series drama, actress Sandra Oh, Killing Eve.
Outstanding.
I can't buy that.
The second season's going to be starting soon.
Best performance in a television series, musical, or comedy, actor Michael Douglas for The Comiskey Method.
Why?
Yep. Actress Rachel Brosnahan. Brosnahan, thank you. The Marvelous Miss Maisel.
Yeah.
She beat out Kristen Bell in The Good Place. Candace Bergen for Murphy Brown. Oh. Allison Brie for Glow.
Really?
And Deborah Messing for Will and Grace. All right, that's weird, right? Will and Grace and Murphy Brown being on this list.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a little weird.
Best performance in mini of a mini series or television film. Actress Patricia Arquette for Escape at Dannemora. And then actor Darren Criss, The Assassination of Giovanni Versace, yep. American Crime Story. So, best supporting miniseries, television, film. Actress Patricia Clarkson, Sharp Objects.
Okay.
And Ben Whishaw, A Very English Scandal. I think that's on Netflix. I mean, Amazon, right? Yeah, it is. And best miniseries and television was The Assassination of Giovanni Versace, American Crime Story. So.
Darren Criss got his start on Glee.
Oh, cool.
Or at least his popular start.
So there it is. That's the Golden Globes.
It seemed to be a fun night. There was a lot of good, you know, we got some chuckles out of it. There were a lot of good people there.
Cecil B. DeMille Award was awarded to Jeff Bridges.
Nice.
Golden Globe Ambassador is on Alba.
Nice.
And the winner of the Carol Burnett Award, Carol Burnett. It's the first year they've ever given it out.
Nice.
So they should at least give it to the namesake, I guess.
There was another nice picture on the red carpet. Sandra Oh was there in a very white dress. And Jodie Comer, from Killing Eve,
right.
Her co-star, was there standing next to her dressed all in black.
Nice. So
it was like good person, evil person. They're posing. It looked great.
So, I tried watching Killing Eve in the past.
Yep.
I watched the first episode. I was like, I was making a big deal out of this. So I watched the second episode, and I kind of dozed off, and I tried to watch it again. I dozed off again, and then finally the other day, I'm just going to fucking watch this thing. So I sat and watched it. So I watched all 8 episodes.
It really picks up, doesn't it?
First episode really didn't do my whole lot for me.
Nope.
But it really picks up after that.
Yep.
Jodie Comer.
Yep.
Is gorgeous, really.
She really is.
Yeah. Like, and a weird, like, I'm not going to say non-traditional, but she's a very beautiful woman.
She is.
And she plays crazy well.
Yes.
And I think it's kind of a turn on, to be honest. Like, maybe it's trouble.
So, speak louder. Your wife can probably hear you through the floor.
I hope not. She should be asleep right now.
You're basically giving her carte blanche. I get turned on by psychopaths.
Well, buddy.
Guess what's coming your way? I'm bringing a knife to bed every night.
Anyways.
No, but she does it well. Like,
I thought the show was fantastic. Like, I really, really enjoyed it.
She's the first psychopath that I've seen on TV that felt like a psychopath. You know, aside from, like, Red Redding. You know?
Yeah, right.
Who's more sociopath than psychopath? Right.
But just the way, like, she really just wants to kill people.
Yeah.
She doesn't get attached to people.
Holy God, she does it well. Like,
and she's like, brutal. I just want to do my job well.
Yeah.
My job is killing people, mm-hmm. you know, and everything else. And she killed some people in some pretty creative ways and in some pretty nasty ways.
Yes.
And then, like, all right, so she meets up with her neighbor. Mm-hmm. And she ends up hooking up with him. And then, like.
But there's no, like, she just hooks up with him because of sex.
Right, right.
This is not feelings or anything.
No. But then he kind of has feelings for her and da-da-da-da. And her handler is like, well, you need to handle him, blah, blah, blah. And then they hear a big thump and a yell. And they go look in the hallway and he's dead because she lied and said that she was like, invented a perfume and was going to go show it to him, blah, blah, blah. And then it was really, it was this perfume that she gave to this lady and she died from it because of the chemicals in it. Well, then he smelt it because he wanted to smell it, and he died violently as well.
So he was taken care of.
Yeah, so he was taken care of, you know, and she's just very nonchalant about killing people. Now, one thing we didn't see, which I think I would have liked to have seen, is we verbally heard her story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she was a teenager. She loved taking foreign language classes. Fell in love with her instructor. They had sex with each other apparently multiple times. Her teacher wouldn't leave her because she was married and loved her husband and yada yada. And so, and there was some line about like, if he didn't have his penis, would you still love him? She said probably not, or something like that. So she cut his dick off.
Mm-hmm.
Villanelle did.
Yes,
Sonic.
Great name.
Yeah, yeah.
Great name, Villanelle. I mean, it's got villain right in it.
Right. Cut his dick off and then killed him. And then so she went to prison. And so we verbally heard all this. She met someone there. She broke out of prison. They trained her to be an assassin. Now she works for the 12 and da-da-da-da. We didn't see any of that.
Nope.
Like, they didn't show us any of that footage at all.
Nope.
Excuse me. On the other end of the spectrum, we have Sandra Oh, Eve Pulaski. Oh, sorry, Pulastri. Who is apparently a Polish-Asian woman.
Hmm. Yeah.
No, her husband's Polish, but that's what she is.
Right.
But she's an Asian-American who's living in England, and she works for MI5 and kind of gets fired in the first movie and the first episode. But then gets hired on to be a, like, under the secret, like, plan or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh, MI6. She's hired for MI6.
Yeah, clandestine.
Yeah, and so she's still investigating this assassin, which is Villanelle.
And she's the only one that can see her as a woman.
Right.
Everyone else thinks, you know, they're just going on the assumption that it's a dude.
So, I mean, like, I don't want to give away too much. Everyone needs to watch this for themselves, personally.
It's speaking. A great.
It's only 8 episodes. It's on Hulu right now. They're about 50, they're about 42, they're 42 minutes apiece, basically. So, I mean, yeah, it's worth the time. Because, yes, the first one's slow, but they really pick up and they really get going. And there were some deaths in there that surprised me quite a bit. But the ending surprised me a lot as well. But for whatever reason, Eve and this Villanelle have some sort of obsession with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, there's this one episode that opens, and I love it because the previous episode ends with them, like, Eve's like, I'm going to get out of the car. She wants to talk to me. I'm going to go talk to her. And so she gets out of the car and it ends. And the next episode, you see it starts kind of where it left off, where as they're doing the opening credits, it shows Sandra Oh, and it says Sandra Oh. And then it shows, you know, Villanelle, and it says, you know, Jodie Comer, and they're standing face. I'm like, that was just kind of neat how they timed up the credits. So it showed their names.
It was beautiful.
You know, it was just a really cool scene. And there's some other cool scenes in it. I really liked it a lot. But you really mean
– So last night – After the Wind. Now, it's coming back. Season 2 is going to start on BBC this month.
Yeah.
Okay. So this was another Golden Globes fun thing. I figured I'd wait for this part, but after it won the award, Netflix chimed in. And they tweeted out, every single one of you reading this right now, hold on, needs to make time in your life to watch Killing Eve. It's a true masterclass in writing, directing, and acting. Oh, goodness, the acting. What Sandra Oh and Jodie Comer do to this show is next-level perfection.
I agree.
And then somebody tweeted back, and they're like, but it's not on Netflix. And they're like, try Hulu.
Yeah.
So Netflix literally gave it to their competitor. Yeah. They're like, dude, go to Hulu and watch this show.
I saw one of the Netflix because Netflix has a few official sites, official Twitter handles. Mm-hmm. I saw someone posting, like, one of the Netflix ones says this Twitter account's just one step away from becoming the Americans, you know, fan account. Which
Hulu retweeted them and said what they said.
Well, I think a lot of these corporate companies has looked at Wendy's has been like,
yes,
this is what we need to do.
Right. People want to be engaged. They don't want to have customer service. They want to have somebody behind it. Netflix is great for that. I follow them on Instagram, they joke all the time. There was a thing at the Golden Globes last night, the Fiji water girl. Did you see her? She was like in the back of every photo. Like, she's just standing there with a tray of Fiji water, but she's always like looking at the camera like, hi, hey, how's it going?
No, I didn't notice.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's funny. Netflix was pointing it out. But yeah, Killing Eve, I'm glad you finally watched it.
Yeah, well, that's what I've actually did like last night and finished it today.
Love it.
Yeah, it was great.
It was so good.
It was time well spent. I really needed to – told you I've been kind of getting burnt out, so I really needed to unwind and whatever. And I was like, I'm just going to give this show a try. And so I watched it, and I loved it. And it's really one of the only things I watched for TV other than The Orville.
See, I watched The Gifted, but I won't get into it.
No, go ahead.
No, it's good.
Other people
good.
That listen like it, though.
It's good. I'm still really enjoying it, honestly. There's still the drama of the family, but like in the last episode, the Purifiers are becoming an actual faction. So it's not just like, oh, here's the Resistance and here's the Hellfire Club, whatever they want to call themselves now. But the Purifiers are actually, these are the human rednecks, armed militia who hate mutants and want to see them all killed, deported, etc. You know, they represent the wild card factor. They don't have powers, they hate mutants, and they're just, you know, IEDs, trucks with guns mounted on the back. And they had captured John, you know, Warpath. And it was really creative watching, I'll always call him Jesse,
yeah,
from, but watching him, like, torture him. Because at one point he's like, you know, he knows that he's bulletproof, but he says, you know, I'm not going to bother with that. He says, but I hear you have really good hearing. So he takes some headphones, cranks it all the way up, and puts it on his head. So it's just absolutely deafening for him. But then he gets pissed off at the end, and he's just absolutely frustrated with him. So he just starts unloading shell after shell of buckshot in his chest. And, I mean, it, he's bulletproof, but it still rips in and does damage.
It's got to hurt.
Yeah.
Even a little.
So it's good to see that. It's good to see Polaris, I wanted to call her Magneto. Polaris is actually developing pretty well as a character. She's not just black and white. Like, a lot of times in these shows, you see a character who has a kid, and suddenly everything, my baby, absolutely. I'm doing this for my baby. Now, like, she cares about her kid, and she wants to make a better world for her, but she goes off and does her own shit because she's like, I need to do this for him. I need to do this for us.
Yeah.
Not just, it's all about my baby. So it's nice to see her developing more of a character than just the one-dimensional, I'm a mom, I'm a baby factory. the Strucker family's dealing with its own crap because Dad is getting, he's got a temporary cure for his X-gene manipulation, but it's as soon as it wears off, he just manifests. His power is that he destroys shit. Like, he touches stuff, and whatever he touches just disintegrates. So, kind of like a King Midas, but reverse, you know?
Oh, okay, yeah.
Instead of turning stuff to gold, he just disintegrates everything. Like, he was driving down the road when it manifested, and the steering wheel just disintegrated in front of him. I don't know how his clothes don't disintegrate, but
that would be very inconvenient.
But yeah, I'm still enjoying this show quite a bit. I'm enjoying seeing the mutant powers really used to the best of their ability. You know, the invisible guy showed up. They were trying to question a guy about why would the Brotherhood be looking for this. And the invisible guy, Fade, showed up and shot him. And then he was escaping, and they had to, like, first John was listening, you know, because he could hear the footsteps. So he knew where he was. And so, you know, threw something at him to knock him down. And then Marcos used his light powers to zap him and bring him out of his invisibility. It was cool. I like that kind of stuff.
Nice.
Yeah. Now, I got to ask, you said the only other thing for TV you watched was The Orville?
I haven't watched Deadly Class.
Well, Deadly Class is really good. But The Blacklist. The Blacklist came back 2 episodes in a row.
Oh, I completely forgot.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to talk about them next week, I guess.
We will.
I'll have to watch them tonight.
But I'll tell you, they're good. Oh,
damn.
Like, it picks up right where the last season left off, and Red is just as devious as he was before. By the end of the second episode, I'm not going to go into detail, but by the end of the second episode, they explain the previews that we saw. Remember when we saw previews and we were like, what's he doing in jail?
Yeah.
They explain that.
Okay.
And Liz is working with Fiona Dorff.
You know, her sister.
That I knew. They're still doing that. I didn't see if it was listed in the beginning, but it probably was. But the don't look at the credits. I'll say that.
Okay.
You know how they'll put the things at the bottom and they'll say, you know, special guest star. I'm not sure if it was on there or not, but don't look at the credits because I want to see if you do what I did, which was one of the characters on there that was the special guest star. I almost didn't recognize him just to look at him, but the moment I heard his voice, I went, is that so-and-so? And I looked it up, and I went, oh, that's so-and-so, because his voice is so distinct. So in the beginning, don't look at the bottom. Don't look at, you know, the name scrolling across. Just kind of, like, focus elsewhere or nod off or whatever. Okay. And then tell me if you don't do the same thing that I did.
Okay. Okay, the wife and I have been watching The Waltons.
Okay. My mother's a big fan of The Waltons.
Yeah, so is my wife, and I remember watching when I was a kid, and it's on Amazon Prime every season.
Nice.
So we've been watching like an episode or two of that a night,
mm-hmm.
And it's you know what it is, it's good wholesome television that you can watch with the kids in the room, and never right. worry about things. And it was fun. An episode we watched today actually had a very young John Ritter as like a 21-year-old evangelist, preacher type guy who, well, he's a cousin of the Baldwins, and he's never had alcohol before. And when they give him a sip of the recipe, well, he doesn't realize it's liquor. That's whiskey.
Oh,
it's funny. But anyway, so
does he do the Helen Hunt thing where he like takes the acid and then jumps out the window screaming and
kinda?
Yeah.
He gets drunk after like practicing his sermon, talking about how people shouldn't be fornicating and drinking and on and on and on. And
then he goes, "I didn't realize it was this good."
So
what's that fornicating like?
It's just, it's just kind of weird or fun seeing a really young John Ritter.
Nice.
And here's something like I guess
miss him.
Yeah, I do too. I guess I didn't realize this.
Okay.
Michael Leonard is the mother on the Waltons.
Okay.
Which I didn't know she was.
Okay.
The thing I'm most familiar with her as is Mrs. Wilk on Scrubs.
Yep.
And I just go back to the episode, like, I see, like, oh, you know, Miss Michael Learn. I'm like, oh, my God, that's Mrs. Wilk on Scrubs. And I turn to Kate, and I go, oh, all I can think of now is, like, the half-dozen episodes she was in, and then, like, the episode when she died, how sad it was. I said, it made me cry.
Mm-hmm.
It was so sad. I said, it made
Dave Foley as the death counselor?
Yes. I go, it kind of made John cry, too. And she goes, well, isn't Scrubs a comedy? I'm like, yeah, it's a comedy, but, boy, they go deep.
Yeah.
I go, they
had some very
they went episodes. Deep on some episodes.
Like, I still remember because that was basically a two-parter.
Yes.
And at the end of the first part was yeah. when Cabbage got fired because he was just incompetent.
Yes.
And they had been doing that whole thing about the virus going around the hospital.
See, I'm
and
already.
He reaches down and picks up the tissue, and then his hands are green, and he goes yeah. and touches her, and she puts her hands up while Fix You is playing by Coldplay. Yes. And yes. you're like, not Mrs. Will.
Yeah, because it's showing, like, the green is showing how this is going around, and she's so happy because he brings her good news or whatever it is. Yep.
And she puts her hands up on her face, and then her whole face turns green. And
it's because now she's getting, you know, she's going to contract the infection, which eventually kills her.
Yeah.
It's sad.
It was.
Scrubs had some very, very sad moments.
It
very
did.
Poignant moments. I mean, as far as comedy as
very
it could
deep
be.
Deep moments, too.
Yeah, well, like the episode of Brandon Fraser's character is dead.
Oh, my God.
The whole episode long, you don't know that he's dead, and Cox is just seeing him. Mm-hmm. And, like, Brandon Fraser's interaction with everybody else isn't. You don't notice, you don't know that he's dead.
Right.
And the whole thing is gearing towards going to his son's birthday party. And then, you know, Cox is standing there talking to, you know, Brandon Fraser. Cox is kind of wearing a suit, and he's just like, come on.
Where's your camera?
Where's your camera? You know, aren't you going to come take pictures of my kid blowing out the cake and all that other fun stuff and da-da-da-da? And then you see JD, and he's like, where do you think we are?
Yeah.
And then Cox kind of like, and then it turns to, and they're at the cemetery because he's died. Like, it was like, oh, my God.
I still never forget. That was apparently the first and only episode that my ex watched. She was flicking through channels one night and saw Scrubs and heard that it was a funny show and came upon that episode.
Oh, Jesus.
And she was like, why would anyone watch this show? This is awful. This is terrible. Like, that was her only experience with it. So when I started falling in love with it, she was like, I can't watch that show.
The show was really amazing.
The first season was a lot darker as well.
Yeah, it was.
But, yeah.
But it's, I think it reminds me of our job, but you know, in dispatching, where you have a lot of light, fun moments, you have a lot of deep, heavy moments, and then you have a lot of people making fun and light of moments that most people don't.
Right.
Because that's how you cope.
Yep.
So, but anyways, so I'm enjoying watching The Waltons with the wife because it's wholesome TV and it's, yeah, it's nice. Good. The Orville, though.
The Orville.
Did you watch it?
I did.
Okay, so were you disappointed a little bit with this episode?
Not at all. I loved this episode.
Okay, I'm torn with this episode.
Okay,
because the thing about last season that we hyped so much is that it didn't have all that dumb humor in it that we thought it would because it's a Seth MacFarlane vehicle. And then it just kind of feels like this season. Well, this episode, I mean, not this season, because there's only two of them. This episode was that kind of dumb humor where Bordas is addicted to pornography or addicted to the essentially, I mean,
it's basically a porn addiction.
has a porn addiction because he doesn't like his mate anymore.
And until they explain that, you just think that he's being a pervert.
Correct. Which I don't know.
He basically keeps shirking his duties.
I guess I enjoyed the episode a lot, but what my fear is if it's going to go down this road.
Well, I'll explain something as we get into it.
But you know what I mean?
Yep, I know what you're saying. So Bordas is shirking his duties. You know, not bad, but he's just like, you know, Captain, can I leave early?
He's leaving like 15 minutes early.
I don't feel well. And they're like, oh, you didn't feel well last night. Okay, well. And he leaves, but instead of going home, he goes to their version of the holiday. And he has a program in there where he basically gets manhandled by another.
It's almost like if someone went to a dominatrix or a prostitute for foreplay or whatever.
Yep.
Different scenarios.
Yes. Yeah. Because then he gets home late and his mate is very pissed at him.
Right.
And he's like, you know, why weren't you here? And I was taking care of the kid and I wanted to have dinner. And he's like, well, the captain made me stay late. So at first, again, he's coming.
And he wants to participate in the sex ritual.
Yeah. And Bordas is like, I'm too tired tomorrow. Yeah. He's like, tomorrow, I'll be here tomorrow. And then the next day, he gets off work early again, and looks like he's heading home, and then he's like, ugh.
He was going to head home, but then he goes to the sex simulator.
Yep, and he does it again, and he gets home late again, and Clyden is really pissed at him again.
Yep.
And again, and up till this point, you're literally, there's no context whatsoever. You're just seeing him go in there and have sex with, you know, imaginary Mocklins.
Right.
And that's it. And so then, you're like, wow. Because Bordas has always been so, like, stand-up.
He's the Worf.
Yeah.
He's the Worf of the show.
So seeing
him in these roles where he's pretending to be a prisoner who is going to have sex with someone.
Please, sir, may I have some water?
Yeah. And then the guy spits the water in his face. And then he's like, I need to get out of here. They're going to execute tomorrow. So basically it's like, well, if you blow me, you can get out.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm a virgin in that way. Like, all that shit like that. I was just like, man, like.
And it really.
I hope the show doesn't go down that road because I think.
No.
I hope it doesn't. That's all.
I don't think that it will. And again, I'll explain this in a minute here. But. So. Clyden gets pissed off. It's two nights in a row. And now is when things start to change. Because now we've also got the B story going on here, which is that the crew of the ship is watching a sun go supernova. And
it's watching eat a planet.
Yes.
Basically.
Because there were originally 11 planets in this solar system. This is the last one left. And they're watching it die out. And they're like, we're recording it, you know, for posterity.
Yep.
Nobody ever gets to see stuff like this. While they're watching it, you know, as we're flipping back and forth, they discover that there's some valuable metal down near the planet's core. And they're like, well, maybe as it's breaking up, we could swoop down there and get it.
Because it would fuel the ship for a year.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, then as they do a little more examining, they're like, well, wait a minute. It's not just valuable metal down there. There's ruin.
It's synthetic. Yeah. Then they find out that the metal is synthetic.
Yeah.
The gas or whatever is synthetic.
And there's like old buildings down there. Yeah. And they're like, wow, maybe we could start. Well, we can't study it because it's too late.
Yeah. Some sort of subterranean, habitat or whatever.
So meanwhile, Clyden goes over Bordas in the middle of the night.
Oh, hold on, wait. There's a key thing you can't skip over.
Oh.
Bordas goes to this other alien and basically, because like the simulations he's made in the holodeck aren't enough anymore.
Right.
So essentially, he goes to this other guy who is just like, hey, you're kind of known for
making. Now, this was a humor part.
You're kind of known for making some pretty extravagant pornographic.
Your race is.
Yeah, exactly. And so he basically makes a Bordas one where it's an orgy.
Yep.
And this is
his friend does. And his friend said that he's never been commissioned by an officer of the Federation.
Because it was done quickly. And he wanted, tell your friends. He's like, I will not.
Yeah.
But then he goes in and it's all these Mucklins who are just there to, make sure he receives pleasure. And then Clyden catches him on the holodeck and he's fully embraced with like three other Mucklins around him, and this is where I was just like, this is the scene where I was like, I think they're going too far.
Yep.
With this, and I hope I'm just afraid, like, if it goes down that road, people are going to get too turned off and the show will get canceled. That was my thought process.
Yep.
But at the same time, I did enjoy the episode.
Right.
So this is where Clyden's had the last straw, and then we see.
So Clyden appears over him in the middle of the night and stabs a sword into his chest. We go to commercial.
Yeah.
For those of us who had it on a DVR.
Yeah. Mine phased in and out.
We come back and the doctor's trying to keep him alive and Bordas dies for a minute.
Yeah.
And then they manage to shock him back with supersonic shocking power. And he comes back to life and he's like, you should have let him kill me, because on Maklar, that's how you divorce someone.
Yeah, he was divorcing me. What? When you want to divorce someone, you just kill them.
Yes, you kill your mate in the night, and that lets everyone know that you want a divorce. And basically, the captain is like, look, we've been patient up until this point with your customs, but you can't murder an officer of the Federation. So he tells him...
The Union, sorry. That's okay.
So,
and there's a scene later, I'm like, why don't they just use the transporter?
Right. I did the same thing.
I'm like, why are they talking about the transporter?
Yep.
Just get close enough to use they don't have one.
So basically, Bordas says Clyden did no wrong, blah, blah, blah. So the captain agrees to not press charges against Clyden or not, you know, basically throw him in jail, keep him in jail.
And then he says he's going to expel him from the ship.
Yeah, he's like, but the next port that we get to, you're off. You're gone. And Clyden's like, no, please, you can't break up my family. I need to be on here. And even Bordas is like, no, let him stay.
We'll work this out.
So they agree to go to marriage counseling.
Which I love the fact that neither one of them grasp what marriage counseling is or couples counseling is.
Yeah.
And then when she explains it the first time, Bordas is like, so what weapons do we choose?
Exactly.
And she's like, no, you're not getting it. And this is a peace accord.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So they do talk. You know, it's not slapstick comedy. They do talk.
This is serious.
And it comes out that Bordas is really pissed at Clyden.
Yeah.
He can't forgive him for the fact that last season, when they had a baby girl and they went through that whole thing where, no, we have to take her back to Maklar and make her into a boy because that's what we do.
Right.
He's like, I've never gotten over it.
Yeah, I can't forgive you because I did not want to change Topa's sex. The only person that could prevent it was you, and you chose not to.
Yep. And
so he resents him.
He completely resents it and says, I can't even imagine, you know, I want to know what her life would have been like if we had left her that way, but I'll never know
now. It's a level of postpartum depression.
Yes. Yes, it is. So in that, it was really powerful. Like,
yes.
Again, we start off the episode thinking he's just a pervert, and then you realize that he's escaping this way by...
Right.
So it was really good that way. So meanwhile...
In the interim...
On our B story, the ruins aren't just ruins. There's people still living there. And they managed to get...
This is heartbreaking.
This is heartbreaking. This was a heartbreaking episode all around.
There's 75 people down there.
Yep. And they can only communicate or... there's no video conference because they're not super advanced. Like when they tell them we're from, you know, another planet, they're like, how is there another planet?
Yeah.
We only know of our planet. And they've known for over 100 years that this sun was going to do this. They've moved underground, but they kind of accepted their fate that they're going to die.
And they don't have a space program.
Right.
They had no sign. And there's only 75 of them left.
Yep.
And
which there used to be thousands upon hundreds of thousands.
And the ship keeps glitching and having little glitches and glitching out. And as it turns out, the program that Bordas bought for his orgy scenario has put a virus in the computer.
Which is nothing more than a spin on modern porn.
Absolutely,
and viruses.
Yes. And except it's affecting the ship and
everything. Not just like it's not a Star Trek thing where it's like, oh, the shields have gone out or anything.
No.
Like it starts with the replicators.
Yeah.
Like he orders pizza and he gets a black blob.
Yeah.
And then it starts affecting the shields and the thrusters and stuff like that.
The communications with the planet, on and on and on. There's all these different things that it keeps affecting. And Isaac has made a antivirus, but it's not working.
Well, he doesn't know that it's not working yet. It's supposedly working.
Yes, exactly. And they don't find out until Isaac and Bordas are on planet that it's not working.
And the reason that Isaac and Bordas are on the planet is because the radiation levels are so high, they're only going to be outside of the shuttle briefly, which... When they landed, I was like, why didn't they face the back end of the shuttle towards the door? It would have been less time exposed. But basically, the doctor said, anybody who steps foot out there is going to be cooked and dead.
Yeah.
So the only two people on the entire ship that could survive it would be Bordas and Isaac, which, granted, Clyden could too, but he's not an officer.
Right.
He's a civilian.
And so Isaac's down there with Bordas, and then they find out that it's not working. And also,
Isaac's the only one that could rewrite it.
And also...
the planet's breaking up faster than they thought.
Yes.
So they're only going to have time for the one trip, and the shuttle can only hold 30 people.
Which, honestly, looking at it, they could have crammed more people in there. I don't know if it was a weight thing.
See, that was my mind. I wish they would have said, like, any more than that would be too much weight.
Right.
And it's like, well, you can take all the children. I can't.
Yeah.
If it's a weight thing, then make it a weight thing, not a numbers thing, because kids are smaller than adults.
They are.
You know?
So.
But regardless,
they tell the people
only that, like, 30 of the 75.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Less than half of you can come with us. And the people do a lottery. And the woman who's in charge, the leader, says goodbye to her husband and child. And he's like, you could have added yourself. And she's like, I'm the leader. It wouldn't have been right.
Right.
And so she basically says, you know, go out, live your life among the stars, live for me, and says goodbye to them. And it touches Bordas because he sees that and he realizes what he could lose.
And there's another scene, too, which I thought was interesting because – I love the fact that Isaac, much like Data, is trying to learn about being human and emotions and thoughts and processes. And
he's doing a great job of it.
Yeah, and so we saw that a lot in the first episode of the season. And now in this episode, he makes the comment of, like, I don't understand why they're choosing the people this way. You would think they would choose the smartest people of the group that can contribute more to society.
Yep.
And Bordas is just like, I'm glad I'm not you.
Yeah. Yep, exactly. He's basically says that, you know, he may be a rough and tumble alien race, but I'm so glad that I'm not heartless like you.
Right, because that's kind of – and they end up choosing the 30 people, which, again, the show is different in the fact that if this was Star Trek, they would have found a way to save them all.
Yes, they would have. And the fact that they
– right.
I don't want to say let them die, but those 40 people died is heartbreaking. But it was – beautifully heartbreaking because it feels like the show really has, like you said, it's different.
Yeah. It's what makes it different.
Yeah. It's not just there's always going to be a heavy, like I said about Doctor Who, the New Year's episode when I was like, oh, wait, he's not going to get sucked out because it's Doctor Who.
Right. Yeah. So I'm glad the Orville's back.
Oh, my God.
So, of course, they get back on the ship and the ship is now malfunctioning, being sucked into the sun. And Isaac gets there just in time to deactivate the virus so they can speed away, but the ship takes a severe amount of damage.
A lot of damage.
Yeah.
Holy crap. And they lost some people. They had hull breaches. Yeah. I mean,
And they get away, but basically the planet breaks up almost instantaneously after the escape vessel,
shuttle.
The shuttle, thank you.
Yeah.
After the shuttle takes off, the planet pretty much breaks up instantaneously. So, like, those people are dead. Like, there was no last chance.
No.
Yeah.
No, this wasn't like, oh, we'll go
there
back.
There was no, we're going to try to go back. Those people are gone.
And we only just met them in the second half of this episode.
Right.
So we never had a chance to draw an attachment to them, but it's still the fact that.
And the one person that they did put us attached to, their leader, dies.
Yeah. So as an audience member, to actually make us feel like, over characters that we never got to see except for in the last 3 minutes of the show.
And here's something else I've noticed. I don't know if you noticed this or not either, but I did because I watch it on Hulu.
Mm-hmm.
And it tells me how long the episode is.
Okay.
These episodes have been 48 minutes long.
Oh, wow.
Instead of your typical 42 minutes.
On the DVR, it did say the Orville will be presented with limited commercial interruptions.
Okay. Yeah, so these two episodes of the, you know, people are like, 48 over 42. 6 minutes is a lot of time.
Sure is.
You know, like,
I've been telling women that for years.
But, like, when you're watching, like, say, an episode of, like, a weekly television show, and it's with commercial, without the commercials, and with opening and closing credits, it's 42 minutes long. So you have 18 minutes of commercials.
Yep.
So then when you watch, like, an episode of Game of Thrones, and it's an hour long or 55 minutes long or 59 minutes.
Holy God, will this ever end?
Yeah, exactly. It feels so much longer because there's so much more content in that time. Yep. The same thing here. These extra 6 minutes is a lot more content. Now, the Waltons, these episodes, which is from the 70s, these are all 47, 48 minutes long because they had less commercial breaks then than they do now.
Yep. So at the end of the day on this one, the captain basically goes in. Now, my thought was immediately Bordas needs to be demoted at least.
Yeah.
Because his program, his, you know, virus almost killed the entire crew. It almost rendered their rescue mission null and void because everybody almost died. So the captain goes in and basically starts to read him the Riot Act.
Yeah.
You know, and Kelly is okay with it. You know, she's like, look, I'm glad you're safe. And then the captain's like, this was the most selfish, irresponsible, stupid thing that I've ever seen an officer do. And Bordas was like, I would like to tender my resignation. He's like, no, Because what you did going down there to rescue those people was one of the most selfless acts, because you could have died very easily. And still, you went down to rescue them. So he's basically back on neutral ground, which I would have liked to have seen, like, some kind of damage, even if it was punitive. Then, of course, he goes to Clyde, and then he tells him that he saw something amazing, and it reminded him that he has something to lose, and he never wants to lose that, so he's going to try again with him, which is big for Mauchlands, because Mauchlands kill each other by divorcing, so these two are going to be trendsetters. Honestly, had I had the ability to, I would have written to Seth MacFarlane and said, thank you for bringing this show on the air. Just because after watching this episode, I was like, this is the kind of show that we've been missing. You know, it's what he set out to do, which was, and I know you were saying that you felt that it was a little too crude and a little too.
Some of it, yeah.
But it really felt like this is what he wanted to do. And first, I will say, though, some of the humor is still good in this. Like, when all the systems were going down, and then his helmsman goes, Captain, we've got another problem. And he goes, neat. What is it? I burst out laughing.
I did like the fact when they're on the holodeck, if you will, and it's the big head alien and his helms, and he's trying to like fix Ed. It. Ed, and he's trying to fix it. And so they got the, too loud, my wife went, they have the holodeck on.
Yep.
And so the Mucklin coming up was like, we want to, you know, for your pleasure. And they're like touching him on the butt and rubbing their. And then when Isaac shows up and they're like, your head is so shiny. And he's like licking his head. I did find all that to be hilarious because, you know.
So what I wanted to tell you about was this week's episode of Family Guy.
Yeah.
It's just on last night because we're recording this on Monday. Dealt with the same thing.
Really?
Chris got him asked out to the dance by this beautiful girl. And he was like, nah, I'm all set. And Brian was like, she was beautiful. And he goes, nah, she's not my type. So later on, he goes to see him in his room. And he's like, what's going on with you? You know, that was a beautiful girl. And he goes, I got everything that I need right here. And he had a browser open with 28 different tabs all simultaneously playing porn. And he's like, I can get everything that I want right here with porn. And so those two, Stewie and Brian, spent the episode with Chris desensitizing him or resensitizing him, because they were saying that, you know, this is the point that people have reached, that it's a porn addiction. They can get all that stuff, and regular people no longer do it for them, so they had to bring him back. So they were doing some fun stuff, like, you know, here's some waterlogged old Playboys. This is how most people got there. And Chris is, like, looking at one of the pictures, and he's like, I'm tapping the thumbnail, and the video isn't playing. And he's like, no, it's just a picture. You allow the image to go into your head and make a story. And he's like, well, that's kind of boring. I can get a live video at home. So they're both Seth MacFarlane shows.
Yeah.
They both came on within a few days of each other. I think that this was a theme that they were doing. So that's why I don't think that it's going down that road of just looking for crude stuff.
Right.
I think it was definitely like he had something to say about this, whether it's him, whether it's somebody he knows. It's a thing. I mean,
it is a thing.
As someone who has been single for, what, 5 years now? Holy crap, it's been that long? Almost 6 years now?
Wow.
5 or 6 years now.
I was thinking of when you broke up with your ex.
Yeah, no, that was almost
like,
10 years
ago. That was like a decade ago, but I forgot you had that other.
Yeah. But as someone who's been single for that long, I could tell you that A, porn can be very alluring, but B, they're right. You know, after a while, you start to become so used to being able to just go and get whatever you want on the internet.
Yes.
That you're like, why would I bother with a real person? That was the whole point of the movie Don John with Scarlett Johansson and Joseph Gordon-Levitt. You know, he said right in the beginning, he's like, porn doesn't judge me. Porn doesn't ask me to go do it favors. It doesn't, you know. Want stuff from me in the middle of the night, I can just go, I can rub one out, and I can walk away. That's why porn is awesome. So, but I think that this was definitely a theme that MacFarlane was doing, and I don't think we'll see it again. So I don't think you have to worry about it.
Well, okay. I'm not going to give up on the show. I was just worried that people would give up. And
right.
Cancel.
Don't give up, people. Still a phenomenal show. Holy God. It was heartbreaking. It was heartbreaking to see Clyde and kill Bordas.
Yeah, rather violently.
Yeah. Just, and he stabbed that right down through his chest. I would say heart, but we don't know where his heart is.
Right, right.
You're over there clicking around an awful lot. What are you looking for?
Oh, no. I'm good. I was just
studying porn.
I'm studying porn. Just queuing up something to talk about.
So, movies, trailers, and news.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. That's where I'm at. Trailers.
Okay.
So I watched a trailer for a flick called Arctic. Did you see it?
No, but I saw the other one called Polar.
Well, you want to know what's funny? They both star Mads
Mikkelsen.
Mikkelsen. Yeah, that's what I just noticed. I'm like, wait a second. I think he's in the other one.
I saw that today when I was at work. I saw an article that said something about, look, Arctic and Polar both starring Mads Mikkelsen have
they
trailers
They could be
out.
Further apart, though.
Oh, no.
Yeah, Arctic, and this looks really good. It's about a man.
Oh, no, Polar looked really good.
Well, Arctic is about a man stranded.
In the Arctic,
and he's about to receive his long-awaited rescue in the helicopter that finds him crashes. The pilot's killed, and the passenger is severely injured. And so now it's the story of their survival out in the Arctic together. It looks really good. Very, very good. Yeah, and then the other one, Polar, I had watched it. I was like, oh, we'll talk about this tonight. And then you sent me the link to it like 10 minutes later.
It's basically Mads Mikkelsen's take on John Wick.
Yeah.
Felt like.
No, okay. So basically, Mads Mikkelsen is a retired hitman.
Mm-hmm.
And he's retired.
Seems
off.
Like just recently retired.
Yeah. And I think it's Polar because he probably retired off to some. It's a Dark Horse. It's based on a Dark Horse comic named Polar. But it seems like he's retired off to, someplace cold.
Yep.
And essentially, from what I gathered from the trailer, he has $8 million coming to him because he retired. But if he gets killed, then that money goes back to
it's a company.
The
that
company
basically hired him and hires these other hitmen.
Yeah.
And they say when you're retired, if you die after you're retired, then your $8 million goes back to the company.
Otherwise, it's your money that they send you.
Right.
And so they basically send people to kill him.
Yep.
And I'm just going to say that was a mistake.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. And then Vanessa Hudgens plays his neighbor that he kind of falls for a little bit.
Yep.
So they try to, get at him through her, and that's a mistake.
Yeah. And it seems like one of the females that's the head one in charge is Catherine Winnick.
Yes.
Who's very famous for her role in Vikings.
Yes. So what I gather is he's in like this, say like he's in Iceland or Norway or some or Greenland or I mean not Iceland but Greenland or Northern Canada or it's just in the winter where he is and it's kind of got that winter drab feel, but yet whenever you see the other hitman people over there from, they have bright colorful suits on, costumes on essentially or whatever. So it's kind of that's where the comic bookish just comes from. But basically, yeah, he's like John Wick and they basically messed with the wrong guy.
Yep. And through half of the trailer, he's wearing an eye patch, a cool eye patch.
Yeah.
And through the other half, he's not. But some of the stuff he pulls off in there, snapping the guy's leg.
The fight scenes, the shooting, the killing. It looks awesome.
Awesomely violent.
Netflix flick comes out January 25th.
Yep. Yeah, that's what's cool about it is it's coming out on Netflix, so we don't have to go to the theaters to see it.
So that's pretty awesome. I watched another trailer called Brawler.
Okay.
This is a movie about the life of Chuck Wepner. And if
his name sounds familiar.
Chuck Wepner, in 1975, fought Muhammad Ali to a 15-round draw.
That's right.
And it is the inspiration for the movie Rocky when Sylvester Stallone saw that. So he made a movie about it. And they mention it in the trailer. So the trailer, this movie comes out January 18th. It looks really good, but it's basically about his life before that movie, before his fight with Ali, after his fight with Ali, and how, when he found out the movie was based on him, that fight, kind of how he sued them about it, and on and on and on. Just everything that kind of happened with it. Looks like a good flick.
Cool.
Looks like a good biopic. I know you have at least one trailer. Oh, I have another trailer I kind of saw that I shared with you.
Kind of saw?
Kind of trailer. I put it under my news category. Punisher Season 2 comes out January 18th, and they released like a 30-second or 1-minute kind of teaser trailer. All you see is Punisher and Jigsaw.
Yeah.
And they both are kind of talking like a little monologue about being created and things about life and this and that.
Uh-huh.
But you see no actual footage from the show at all.
Right. They put out another short clip.
Yeah.
that does show footage from the show.
I'm not going to bother with it. I'm going to watch.
Oh, no. Apparently, the psychologist or psychiatrist or whatever who's working with Jigsaw is Maggie from Supergirl.
Oh, okay.
You know, the girlfriend?
Yeah.
She's now on this show.
Okay.
And she gives him the plain ceramic mask and talks about how, you know, you should decorate it. And he's like, I'm not in kindergarten. And she's like, well, everybody, you know, finds that it helps with their therapy to kind of put their expression on there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it looks good.
It does. I mean, the teaser I saw does look good.
The problem is, though, like I said to you in my text, is
the week after it comes out, they'll cancel it.
Yeah. Absolutely. 100%. So.
Yeah, that is kind of bothersome.
Yeah. But I'm still going to watch it. I'm still going to enjoy it. It comes out on the 18th, so just a week from this Friday. A
couple weeks, yeah.
This Friday, there's actually a show coming out on Netflix that sounds interesting. I haven't seen any trailers for it. It's called Sex Education.
I saw – there's a trailer out.
Oh,
I saw on Instagram a trailer, like, without the sound on type of thing.
Basically, but it's this teenage kid, and he's friends with a girl, and his mom is a sex therapist, and it's Gillian Anderson.
Gillian Anderson. I talked about it a few weeks ago.
Yeah, and I'm interested in seeing that.
Yep. Show.
I'll check it out.
Interested in anything Gillian Anderson, really?
Yeah. I've been seeing this trailer – multiple different commercials for a TBS exclusive short run series coming up called Miracle Workers. Mm. Steve Buscemi is God. Daniel Radcliffe is an angel. Mm-hmm. And God's an idiot.
Okay.
He basically decides he just wants to blow up the earth. He's just done with it.
Oh,
so,
shit.
And apparently Daniel Radcliffe works in the prayer answering department. And he gets about $6 billion a day, and he can maybe get to like three a week because, you know, he just has that many that he's trying to answer. So
damn.
He's working by himself.
Yeah, he's a little behind the
eight. But it's a limited run series, so I'll check that out. It's TBS, okay. So it'll probably be on Hulu. I sent you a trailer you didn't really like that much, but Netflix has released one for Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego?
Yeah, it just didn't do anything for me.
I like the looks of it. I always loved the games as a kid.
I like the Channel 10, or sorry, the PBS
yep.
game show TV thing.
Yep.
With, was it Rockapella?
Oh, Jesus. I don't remember.
They're the ones that did the acapella theme song.
But yep.
I thought maybe, were they called Rockapella?
Something like that, yeah. But I used to play the computer game constantly, and it came with an encyclopedia, and you had to look stuff up, and I remember that's where I learned what mousy hair was, because they'd say mousy, and I'm like, Mom, what is mousy hair? And she's like, it's blonde. I'm like, oh, okay. So to this day, I remember that. But yeah, it's an interesting new twist on it. It's still animated.
Yep.
But now we're going to see her origins, and she became a master thief and then realized she didn't want to be a thief. So now she steals from other thieves. Kind of a cool twist, in my opinion. And then I saw a very quick teaser today. Do you remember a movie that came out a while ago? It had Saori's Ronan, that girl, Lady Bird.
Yeah.
Okay. It was called Hannah, and she was the teenage girl who was trained to be an assassin.
Yes, I thought I watched the movie.
Yeah. Well, the Amazon is adapting it to a TV series.
Oh, okay.
Different actors and actresses,
yep.
Same exact story.
Hmm.
Teenage girl trained from birth by her dad to be the world's most perfect assassin, and there's a CIA agent woman who's sending agents after her.
Yep.
Let the games begin. It's an Amazon series, so it'll probably be pretty cool.
Jeez, that came out in 2011.
Yeah, that was a while ago.
Huh. Yeah, that's cool. I could get behind that.
That's all I saw for trailers.
The only little bit of news I have is You're the Worst, and the final season returns Wednesday the 9th at 10 p.m. on FX.
I've been seeing some of the promos for that.
Yeah, that's good. And I saw a countdown for A Quiet Place 2, which hits theaters May 2020.
I still haven't watched the first one yet, but I want to.
I did.
Did you like it?
Yeah. I mean, I guess a sequel is just them being quiet more, I guess. I mean, I don't know.
A Quiet Place too.
So I watched a couple movies.
Hold on. I've got some news.
Oh, I apologize.
That's all right. CW has officially ordered a Batwoman pilot.
Oh, shit. Yes, that's right. I texted you about that.
Yep. David Nutter is going to be directing it.
Yep.
He was one of the Game of Thrones directors, famously for the Red Wedding episode. A couple others. So that's
kind of
cool.
He also did like the pilots of Flash and...
Oh, yeah. Yep. So that's exciting. So if they're asking for a pilot, you can assume they're going to pick it up.
Yep.
They already tested her in Elseworlds, so.
And they already plan on have her being in this, in the
Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Yeah, the next year's collaboration.
Okay, now I know that we had talked about this a while ago. Jumanji,
yes.
The newest one with the rock.
Yes.
And how I really liked it.
Yeah.
It was actually really good in my
opinion. And if it shows up on Netflix or Hulu or whatever.
I think it's on Amazon now.
Oh, is it?
Yep.
Okay.
That's how I watched it.
Oh.
Well, maybe. I watched it on one of those. We'll figure it out. But anyway, so the sequel is coming out.
Okay.
They announced two new people who will be joining The Rock and Karen Gillan and Kevin Hart. Danny DeVito. I know. You hear his name and you're just like, awesome.
Yeah.
And Awkwafina, that Asian girl who, no idea. But they're moving forward on it, so that's kind of cool. And then the other one, I really like this. This was some really good news today. CES is going on right now, Consumer Electronics Show.
Oh, yeah.
So all the big tech stuff's out there. Well, it also includes some of the big movie companies and TV companies. So Kevin Feige was doing a lot of press stuff, and he was talking about different projects that are coming up. Endgame. He says that for Avengers Endgame, all promotional materials, trailers, clips, etc., will only feature footage from the first 15 to 20 minutes of the movie.
I like that.
I love that. He says like they don't want to give away any of the secrets.
I hate it when they do that. That's the one thing. We've talked about that, where you're watching a movie, and you're getting near the end, and all of a sudden you go, oh my God, I saw a scene in the trailer.
Right. I know that scene still has to come up here at some point. And granted, sometimes they don't because they were like deleted or made just for the trailer. But yeah, he says 15 to 20 minutes at max. That's where they're going to be pulling their footage from.
Good.
I'm all about that.
All about that as well.
So kudos to them. And that's all I got for news. So movies. And don't forget, we said this week we'd talk about Bandersnatch.
Oh, we did, didn't we?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So budget a little time in there for that.
I will. Sorry to Bother You. I watched that.
Now, I watched Sorry to Bother You a couple weeks back because it was one of those that I had heard so many good things about. And I watched Sorry to Bother You and went, I need to be able to talk about this with someone, so I'm going to subject Mike to this.
Yeah, thanks for that.
So I sent him a message, and I said, you need to watch this movie so that we can talk about it on the podcast.
And I didn't say, okay,
it's a good movie. I just said, you clearly need to watch about it.
So, okay. Movie's about a guy.
The first movie, because this is essentially two movies, in my opinion.
Well, it's not. It's just one movie. Sorry to Bother You. Basically, it's about a guy. He's an African-American. He's black. And he gets a job at a call center because he needs a job.
Yep. He's living in his brother's house or cousin's house.
His uncle's garage.
And his uncle's like, I need money.
Yeah.
You know, I'm falling behind. So you got to start paying some shit around here. Terry Crews,
yeah. So he gets this job working at a call center where you call people to sell them stuff. And he's not doing so well. And then finally he gets told by Danny Glover, well, you got to have a black voice. I mean, you have your white man voice. And he's like, why are people saying for a black guy I sound white? No, 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 your real white man voice. And David Cross provides the white man voice for him.
Yep.
And he's just lip syncing what David Cross is saying. So it's kind of funny. Oh, okay. It's like, then I thought, all right, this is going to go along the lines of like, I'm going to get you, sucker, or something like that, you know.
And you've got some beautiful cinematography like I talked to you about.
Yes.
You know, when he's doing his call center thing, when he calls somebody, the camera shifts so that he's like in their house.
Yeah, it's like his desk and he and everything just falls into the person's house where he then is talking to them on the phone, trying to get them to buy something.
Yep.
And
it's to show how invasive they can be, these telemarketers.
Yes. And when he starts using his white man voice, he makes tons of sales to the point where he does well enough to go get shifted upstairs to the high roller district where
now, meanwhile, a lot of the other rank and file guys that have been working there, including Steven Yeun, you know, Glenn from Walking Dead, are talking about how they're not getting enough money. They're not getting enough benefits. They want to strike and unionize.
Yep.
They want to bring the union into this and unionize so that they can start getting some benefits.
Steven Young's character is a union supporter who goes into jobs like this, starts a union, and then leaves and goes to another place to start another union.
Which we find out later.
Right. So this is all going on, and now they're having but the main character.
So all it is at this point is it's a class struggle kind of thing.
Yeah,
you know,
it's a class struggle.
He's kind of got a girlfriend in Tessa Thompson who keeps showing up in everything these days.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's trying to make ends meet and he's struggling, you know, because he's living in his uncle's garage, like you said. And the garage door goes up at one point when his girlfriend's about to bang him. And, you know,
and there's this one place that they keep seeing commercials for it on the movie, which is basically these people sign these lifetime contracts to go work at this place. And they basically put themselves into indentured servitude, where they don't have to worry about bills and money and food and this and that. And everything's provided for them. They just have to work for their share.
Yep.
And they live in big rooms with two people per bed and on and on and on. Now everyone wears the same clothing and this and blah, 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 blah. And a lot of people think it's bad or it's a cult or it's just not good, which it's not.
No.
So this is another thing going on. So the main character gets invited to this party by his new boss in the high-rolling floor.
Cassius.
Cassius, thank you. And so they go to this party, and Cassius meets this cult guy that, you know, I'm going to call him a cult guy, but he runs that business where people don't have to worry. And he ends up taking the wrong turn, going downstairs to find a bathroom. And instead, he finds someone yelling for help, and so he goes and unlocks a door, and a half-man, half-horse falls out. Now, not like a Minotaur half-man, half-horse, but like a man who's been transformed into a horse, so he's tall, huge, muscular, he's got a horse face, buff legitimately body. Buffed out, and a giant dick.
Yeah.
Which they horse talk head, about
a horse lot. Horse dick.
Yeah. Which they talk about a lot, because he's naked and it's just dangling there.
And that's one of the benefits.
And they call them, dick. Was it? You know,
Equistapians.
Equistapians, yeah, because like equine or equine is horse, so equistapians, horse sapiens. And I'm like,
the leader of this group is Armie Hammer, which I saw him come on the screen. I'm like, yeah. Armie Hammer, awesome.
And I'm just like, what the frig am I watching? You know, like, this is ridiculous. And then the movie just kind of goes downhill from there. And I'm not going to get into all the details of it, but like, these Equisapiens, there's a bunch of them, and they've all been tricked into snorting this drug, which then turns them into, after several days, turns them into this Equisapien.
So now Cassius thinks he's snorted it, so he's going to turn into one.
Right, and so and he eventually, and so he sets things in motion to set this guy up and expose them for what they truly are and shut them down and on and on and on. And then he gets a new job. Well, he gets the same job, but he goes back to the rank and file section of it. And, you know, he gets rid of his big fancy car in his apartment. Him and his girlfriend live happy ever after and they're in his uncle's garage. And, you know, he's got this sensible car to drive. And you think that's the end of it. Oh, no, because at the end of it, he turns into an Equisapien.
Right. Because ultimately, even though he exposed everybody, nobody really cared.
No one gave a shit.
Nobody cared. They were like, whatever.
Yeah. And so then he shows up at Armie Hammer's house with his other Equisapien friends. And, you know, they kill him, do whatever they do to him, it doesn't matter.
There were a lot of political messages in here. There were a lot of, like, societal messages, like the fact, oh, there's horse people and nobody seems to care.
Yeah.
But ultimately, when it took that hard left turn with the Equisapiens,
that was just...
Up until that point, I was okay. I was behind it. I was like, all right, it's a struggling guy now. Yeah. Now he's got to make the decision, you know? Does he stick with his friends or does he take the promotion and do better for himself, you know? Okay, it's a class struggle thing. It's, what the fuck is that? It's a horse dick man.
Yeah. I cannot give this a good sell.
No.
I cannot give this a recommendation.
No.
As a matter of fact, I think you should just avoid it altogether.
It was bizarre. Like, again, I felt like it was two different movies.
Yeah. It wasn't. It just, yeah. Yeah.
But I'm glad that you've seen it so that I can at least not feel like I'm the crazy one.
Yeah. Well, thanks for that.
You're welcome. Yeah.
Dick move. On that
part, yeah.
I watched one other movie this week. We watched it together. Did you have any other movies to talk about?
I watched the new Netflix comedy special from Ron Funches, Giggle Fit.
How's that?
It was great. Ron Funches is hilarious anyway.
Yeah.
You would have liked it because he's a huge wrestling fan.
Yep.
And so his opening part, you know how whenever they do a stand-up comedy thing, they always have an opening part. It was him like meditating to try to find his center, and his spirit animal was Ric Flair.
Oh, nice.
And Ric Flair's floating head was there, and he was like, you know, telling him, he cuts this big promo about, you know, if you want to be a weed smoking, woman loving, blah, blah. Like, basically, the Ric Flair promo.
Yeah.
And then they did some wooing, and then he showed up on stage wearing a big fancy robe that somebody came out and took off of him. But it's really funny. He says right in the beginning that a lot of comedians will go out there and talk about what's wrong with the world, what's wrong with politics and everything. He's like, I'm not going to do that. I want to talk about other stuff. He has this one extra long thing where he talks about his 15-year-old son who has autism. And he says, you know, so certain things have to be done a certain way. Like, are we going to get pizza? Yes, it's always going to be cheese pizza, extra sauce. Cheese pizza, extra sauce. Kid, that's what he wants. And so he's talking about this one time that he was eating his cheese pizza with extra sauce, and Ron looked down and he was like, he's not wearing pants. Just sitting there. He's got a shirt on. He's Winnie the Pooh in it.
Yeah.
And he's like, how about you go put some pants on? And his kid goes, nah. And he's like, up until this point, I thought we had like a father-son thing going. Apparently, no, we're just roommates. So now I had to take another approach to this. And I was like, how about you at least put some underwear on? Gary's getting upset. He's like, I forgot to mention Gary was there. And his son goes, you go get him. He goes, so I went to get his underwear because I lost that battle. Then he goes, and I saw it coming and I'm like, oh, shit. He goes, so then karma took the wheel. He said, and he reached over for his next slice of cheese pizza, extra sauce.
Oh, God.
He lifted that pizza up and he stared at it for a minute. He held it there. He goes, and he went to put it in his mouth, and it all slid right off, right onto his dick and balls. He goes, and now I got a 15-year-old autistic kid jumping up and down in the sky and screaming, Dad, cheese on my nuts, cheese on my nuts, cheese on my nuts. He goes, and I went over and I went, oh, too bad you weren't wearing your pants, huh? He goes,
oh, jeez.
He goes, because if you're not willing to blow on the cheese that's on your kid's nuts, what kind of parent are you, really? But it was good. I highly recommend it. Ron Funches is a riot, and he's got some good stuff. And like I said, you get to see Ric Flair in the beginning, so there you go.
There you go.
Obviously, he's doing something right if Ric Flair agreed to promo him.
Right.
So.
Well, he gave him money.
Yeah.
Let's just be honest. That's where Ric Flair is at this point. He gave him money.
Yeah. I was trying to be noble, but
that's all right. That's all right. They say don't make your heroes. Yeah.
So, yeah, we've got two movies left to talk about.
Two.
Bandersnatch.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right.
And?
Hereditary.
So we watched this Saturday night?
Yeah, you came over Saturday, and surprisingly, my wife stayed up and watched it with us.
It was proximity. She was just there on the couch.
Yeah, and we
gave her every opportunity. We said it was going to be disturbing. We had no idea what it was. We had just heard that it was very disturbing and very awesome, and it would mess with you, and you wouldn't know what was going on.
Yeah.
You wouldn't even believe it. You had to watch it. Had all kinds of critical acclaim. And, you know, all these... critics said that it was good, and audience members couldn't stop talking about it, and Hereditary was the new horror movie of the summer, and I never saw it. I remember saying to you, boy, we should go see that.
Yeah, I remember that.
We both like horror movies. We should, but
and I remember seeing it in Redbox, and like, oh, I should get that, and just never did.
And then I came over the other day to record with you, and at the end, I was like, oh, you said you have Amazon Prime. Hereditary's on there, and you were like, oh, let's invite Johnny over, and we'll do a horror night.
Yeah, and then... Johnny couldn't make it, but Kate stayed up and watched it with us, and then we...
He's the lucky one.
Yeah.
He was sick.
Yeah, yeah.
I would have traded places.
This movie was... The shits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the screaming green shits.
Yeah.
And the thing is, after the movie, we both were like, well, that was different.
Yeah.
We didn't hate it at the time.
No, but...
I don't think it's sunk in yet.
No, it just... I don't even really want to break down the whole explanation. No. I want people to go watch this for themselves.
If they want to.
Or don't.
Okay.
Okay, so first of all, the synopsis says, and you said this, you did a very long Facebook rant.
Yes.
Which you should just make public.
I was motivated.
And I get behind everything you said in it, especially because the synopsis says the matriarch of the family dies and blah, blah, blah. Well, no, because for us, when the movie starts, grandma's dead.
It starts out with her funeral, basically. So the matriarch for the family for us is Toni Collette.
Yeah. We never get to see flashbacks of grandma. We never get to see – we don't even see an actress.
She talks about her briefly here, briefly there, yeah. And that's it. And then you have like one of the kids say like, she wanted me to be a boy. And then you have the other kid – I never let her, talk to Peter or touch Peter, but she got her claws into Charlie and da 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 da. And Charlie's like, she wanted me to be a boy, and that's kind of about it. And it's just there's this slow build, and then finally it gets to this point, and it's just like, wait a second, how is this related? How did they get this here? Why does her body not have a head on it? Why this? Why that? Like it's just... And then somehow at the end, it's about raising one of the devil of the kings of hell.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just fucking dumb. I dropped an F-bomb. I tried all episode not to.
This was a good place to. If anybody wants to...
PG-13 still.
Legitimately, like... try to come across Twitter or reach out to us somehow and defend this movie, by all means. We're not saying, you're not allowed to like this movie. Because I had a few people, I had one person on Facebook say, well, I will rebuttal you by saying I liked it. Okay.
Great.
Everyone's entitled to their opinion. He couldn't give me a reason. He just said that he liked it.
You know what movie is better than this movie? Dawn of Justice. If I had to sit down and watch Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice Extended Edition, or Hereditary again, I'd watch Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice.
I can't believe I'm saying this, but I would too.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's some harsh truth right there.
Yeah.
There's some fallacies here, okay? First off, it's not a horror movie.
It's not. It's a psychological thriller.
But all the psychological stuff is stunted.
Yeah.
Like... they could have gone, and I put this in my rant, they could have gone so many awesome ways because they talked right in the beginning about different mental disorders that afflicted the family.
Yeah.
And you would think with something called Hereditary that they'd be talking about how the mental disorders afflicted the kids. But no.
It didn't. And there's people that show up at the end, and you're like, who the fuck are these people?
Yeah. Why are there naked people just standing in this house?
And there's no explanation for it whatsoever.
Oh, we never get an explanation.
None. They do rely on jump scares.
Yep.
Which one did get me.
Yeah, it did.
It got me good.
And your wife pointed that out. Oh, my God, it got Michael. Oh, my God, it got Michael.
Yeah, it got me good, I'll have to admit.
Yeah, you yelled right out loud. You're like, whoa!
Yeah, but looking back, it's nonsensical.
Yeah.
Like, the reason for it, like, I get the... You know what I mean? Like, it just... This movie's garbage.
This movie was hot garbage, and I was angry for the fact that it was so touted. And, the guy who said that he liked it, one of his defenses was that it was overhyped. He's like, well, people probably overhyped it to you, and so, it couldn't live up to the expectations. Now, I've had that happen a lot in my life. However, I've never had one of those movies where it was overhyped and I came out of it going, this is hot garbage. I would always say, that wasn't as good as people said, or, boy, that was a real... disappointment. This was terrible.
I can't figure out how this is 89% on Rotten Tomatoes.
I don't either. 87% on IMDb.
Even the audience score puts it at 63%, and I don't understand.
I don't understand it either. I don't get it.
I almost want to create a Rotten Tomatoes account so I can write a review of one star on this.
I should do that. I have a Rotten Tomatoes account.
I don't. Oh, I can do half a star, actually.
I would do zero stars.
Oh, just not interested.
Yeah. Well, no. I would have to.
That's different. You have to put something in.
Yeah, I would put something.
I just didn't like this at all.
No.
Like, not at all.
No. And that's the worst part is that sometimes you get done with a movie like this and you're like, wow, that was hot garbage. It didn't even affect us until, like, for me, like I said, it was Saturday night. And this morning I woke up and I'm like, I need to say something about this.
Yeah,
this
I noticed that. That was a long rant that all of a sudden popped up because we hadn't really talked about it. And all of a sudden you're just like, this is hot garbage. And I remember Saturday night after getting done, we just were going, well, that was different. That wasn't what I expected.
It sat there and it marinated. That was different.
Yeah.
No, this movie is garbage. It should not be watched. If you do like it, again, we're not saying you're a bad person or anything like that.
I kind of am.
Okay. Oh. But, if you have legitimate reasons, not just, I liked it, it was good. I mean, that's not – I'm looking for counterpoints. And if anybody here is listening is my friend on Facebook, I'm sure you've seen it. I can copy and paste it if you want. I'll email it to you if you really want to see my criticisms of this movie.
You know, when I talked about how much I hated Dawn of Justice, my buddy Aaron presented to me as to why it worked, yep, why it was good. And I could get behind a lot of his arguments. He gave me a very good argument that was thought out. Mm-hmm. And I could get behind a lot of his arguments. But my counter to that was just like, Martha, though. I mean, come on. The whole premise of the movie, the basis is that they're both their moms are named Martha.
Yeah.
And that's what changes everything. Like, yeah. And then.
And why is Batman murdering people?
And Lex Luthor.
And Lex Luthor.
So
he might not even be the real Lex. He might be Alexander or.
But anyways, I'm not going to talk about that movie anymore. We've talked about it enough since it came out.
So many times it's been referenced. So yeah, Hereditary, garbage.
Yep. Absolute garbage. And then we watched Bandersnatch.
I may actually start a blog just so that I can put that up there. It'll be like the kickoff of my movie review blog.
Do it. You should do a movie review blog. I will contribute to it.
Movie review and video game review and TV review.
Maybe. Yeah. But because my buddy Brandon used to have a video store counter, which was kind of like a retro blog type of thing. But it's kind of fallen to the wayside.
Okay.
Because that would be a good place for it.
Yeah.
He has his 90s review blog now, 90s horror review, which is kind of neat. But anywho.
I guess I already started one.
What is it?
Wordy Nerd Reviews.
There you go. Just run with that. Because I don't have any place to put, like, if I want to write something about a movie or TV show now.
Right.
I don't have it. Because I already have my hot dog blog, which I don't do much on anymore, but it's there and it gets a lot of traffic, actually. Mm-hmm. And I have my Wrestling Insomniac, which gets, that's my main focus. And then, like, my personal blog, which is, like, our family day trips and vacations when I write about those. None of those are places where it's appropriate to put movie reviews or thoughts about TV shows or anything. So.
I've actually started 13 different blogs. I just haven't done anything with them. It was mostly just like getting the idea and reserving the name. I'm like wordynerdreviews.wordpress.com. Yes.
Yeah.
I got shit to do.
Yeah.
You know, and never going back to it.
Mine's Blogspot. Truth is, if I didn't work night shift, I probably wouldn't have the time to work on them as much as I do.
I was thinking about that.
Because when I was doing schoolwork this first semester, yeah, a lot of things fell to the wayside.
I mean, I'll be honest. I wrote that whole rant this morning while I was at work.
Yeah.
Like, I went in and I sat down and I'm just like, but I wrote it in an email to myself.
Yeah, and then, yeah, I've done that too.
And then I went to the bathroom and posted it on Facebook.
All right, Bandersnatch.
Bandersnatch, okay. Yes. Because we said last week we'd give people a chance to watch it and catch up and... Then we talked about it afterwards, which is why you were probably thinking that we'd start.
Yeah, I know. Now I'm debating, do we want to give people another week, or do we just want to talk about it now? Because we are pretty long now.
We are pretty long. Let's give people another week.
We'll give people one more week.
Yeah, one more week, people.
Yeah.
Watch Bandersnatch.
Absolutely.
Because it is really good.
The average viewing is 90 minutes, it says, though the quickest path to an end is after 40 minutes. And there's apparently 150 minutes of unique footage.
I felt like the quickest path to an ending was after 3 minutes.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if you take the job, then it's just like, eh.
Anyway, so, yeah, we'll talk about Bandersnatch next week.
I feel like this is, maybe Bandersnatch is going to become our, we didn't have time for Matt Damon. We'll try to get him in next week.
Our apologies to Matt Damon.
Our apologies to Bandersnatch. We couldn't quite fit it in this week. So, yeah.
Anyhow, that's it. Thanks. On the Twitter machine, I'm at Superstar Mel.
I'm the Quantum Geek G33K.
And that's it. That's the show.
Later.